insanity.
So we're going to talk about the Reds. We're going to do our 1 month wrap up and summary and the outlook for the season based on that first month of the 2025 season. So what do you say we get this thing started?
Let's talk about the Reds. We're almost, well, I believe we're 1 month in by now because they started in late March. So this might be a good time to reflect upon month number one in the season and see how we feel they're measuring up.
Hold on. Why don't you start that over and reintroduce that Brian's on? Because this is, again, totally separate podcast now. So.
Yeah, but you keep introducing new things. First it was come up with something. Now it's introduce Brian and.
Yeah, well, you'll figure it out.
Which one do I do first?
You do both. Just take it away. You've led plenty of business meetings in your life. I'm sure you can handle this.
Begrudgingly, I have. But happy to welcome back Brian Thomas, who was with us last year to discuss the Reds.
That was our halfway talk, wasn't it?
It was the halfway talk.
And this year it's going to be the one-month talk. As they started in late March, we're sitting here in late April. So we're about 1 month in, and it's a good time to, I guess, gauge everyone's feelings on how the Reds are doing and how it looks for the rest of the season. And I guess as you think about it, what are the keys to continued or future success this season? And, you know, what might be the risk that hold them back?
All right, let's just start with this. Overall, give me your elevator pitch or your punchline. How are the Reds doing right now, Brian?
I am pleasantly surprised. They haven't had the strongest schedule, but they are, you know, they're in second place. What are they, three back, I think, of the Cubs who...
it's less than that.
Or it may have been three yesterday. I'm not sure, but what concerns me is the Cubs have had an absolutely brutal schedule, and they're still 2.5-3 games ahead of the Reds. They've finished their season with the Padres, the Dodgers, and maybe the Giants.
So the Reds are one.
Reds
game
are
behind.
One game out.
Oh, there's one game out now. Okay.
Yep, and yes, so April 14th through the 16th, they played the Padres, then the 22nd and 23rd, they played the Dodgers, and then their last three games were against the Phillies.
And the Cubs opened against the Dodgers over in Japan.
They played a series the 11th through the 13th against the Dodgers. So they've played the Dodgers and the Padres twice in the month of April.
Yeah, so I think they're done with them for the year.
But you're right, that's a brutal schedule. That division's tough, dude.
So, everyone said I think the Cubs were the team to beat, and it kind of seems that way. I'm very happy with the Reds' offense, amazingly, with the way they looked early. First half of the month, and they didn't really tear the cover off in spring training. The pitching, I think, is where it was expected to be, maybe a little bit better than expected. Brady Singer has turned out to be a very nice pickup.
Yep. So I'll say this. I think the first half of the month, I think we saw some tendencies show up from last year as far as performance or lineup choices, etc. But I think, in my opinion, that was Tito's figuring stuff out. And I think over the last couple weeks, we've seen Tito come through as far as his daily lineup decisions are concerned. And I think that's where we're seeing a big improvement. And, I mean, it even shows in the win-loss record. They're on a 5-game win streak right now. So I think the Tito effect is finally starting to show on game day, whereas I know if you talk to the guys, they'll all talk about how even in spring training, you know, how much they like the vibe with Tito being in the clubhouse and the way things are handled and stuff like that. But, yeah, I'm with you. I'm pleasantly surprised with the hitting of all things, because those first couple weeks I was like, oh, man, here we go again. We're going to have a lineup full of 240 hitters and a couple guys at 270. Like, all this pitching, isn't going to matter if we can't score runs. But I think it's pretty much about the time Austin Hayes came back, they've been tearing the cover off the baseball.
He's been on fire. Marte has been a pleasant surprise. I think he's got his head screwed on, hopefully screwed on straight after having spent a few weeks in the minors and bouncing back and forth once or twice.
Well, if that doesn't sober you up, nothing will.
Right. Yeah, well, my opinion of last year when he came back, he should never seen the major leagues. They just should have parked him in AAA the rest of the season.
I think that's the difference between Bell and Tito.
Yep.
Yeah. Bell's more of a player's manager, doesn't want to hurt their feelings.
And
I'll ask you, you had said, Clayton, that it seemed like the second half was different. Is it possible that Tito was leaning a little more on maybe Benavidez and DJ to help him with lineup and pitching decisions, and now he's more comfortable that he's consulting with them less and making his own decisions?
I think that's part of it. I think the other part of it is you got guys like Candelario. Look how much he's making. And this isn't me trying to rag on the guy. I'm just speaking to a specific circumstance that doesn't apply to just him on this team, except for the money factor. Look how much he's making. For a small market club like the Reds to bench a guy like Candelario is no small deal, right? The guy's a veteran. He's making a bunch of money. He deserved his fair crack at it the first couple weeks. And then I think due to lack of performance, now you're seeing, okay, well, look at all these guys that are hitting and doing well. We can't just keep him in the lineup. So I think part of it is he was leaning on the other coaches. I think the other part of it is, okay, team's paying this guy a bunch of money. He's the vet. These guys are vets. We're going to play them first, and we're going to see how this shakes out. And it started to shake out, and now you're seeing the top performers getting the playing time, which is how it should be. Just like any other job, you get hired and playing time based on merit.
Well, I do think to your point, I think it makes a difference when decisions are made, like the decision with Candelario to – you know, maybe sit him down for a series of games, not just a game to give him a rest, but it's not that you're hitting. We don't even like the way you're approaching the pitch, and we don't like your swing.
Yeah. I mean, it's hitting the baseball is hard, dude. So when your numbers aren't showing good, or when you don't have good numbers, I mean – it's not just one thing. It's everything top to bottom with your approach to the plate, your swing. I mean, dude's uptight at the plate. Anyone's going to be uptight at the plate when.
Yeah. Well, the word was, I guess, whatever. Maybe yesterday after the Baltimore series, he supposedly Francona had a conversation with him to, in essence, I think, inform him that, hey, you're not going to be getting the playing time that you've become accustomed to.
You earn it.
You've got to earn it back. Exactly.
And this is not an entitlement program.
Well, you got another guy in Matt McClain who has serious potential to be like a career 280 to 300 hitter. From where I sit, I think he got a taste of some home runs, and maybe that's affecting his approach at the plate. But he's kind of in the same boat as Candelario. He got benched a game or two, kind of give him a chance to get the reset button. But it's hard to go send guys out there that, hey, we know you can perform, but you're not performing right now. You can't send them out there based on that when you guys got guys like Lux hitting 300-something, Hayes hitting 300-something, Steer's finally feeling comfortable playing the field. He's been hitting a lot better since he's been playing the field. You got two catchers that are absolutely torching the ball, which is unheard of. I mean,
you got Stevenson knocking on the door to come back.
They could literally put three catchers in that batting lineup, and those guys would perform right now.
I agree with everything you said. I think one glaring difference when you talk about Candelario and you talk about McClain is defense.
Oh, McClain and Ellie. It's not going to last long because I highly, highly doubt the Reds are able to re-sign Ellie, but you better enjoy it while it lasts watching those two up the middle because it's something special, buddy.
We've got him till 2029, I think, before he can become a free agent.
Whereas when I watch Candelario, sometimes I feel like I'm watching Scott Rolen all over again at the end of his career with the Reds.
Well, Marte has looked. You know, he was a train wreck playing the field last year, and he's seems like his head's in the game a little bit more out in the field than it was last season.
He didn't start off well this season in the field, but I think he's coming around. I think now that he's hitting well, I think that confidence is drifting over into his fielding, his confidence in the field as well, which is a big deal.
Well, I would agree with you, I think we could all agree that this game's as much, if not more so, mental than it is physical.
It's almost all mental.
Yeah, there's a lot of mental. I mean, at least to give McClain credit, as bad as he's been at the plate for the after that kind of hot start to the first week, 10 days of the season, he's doing it in the field. Like I said, I was at the game last night. I think they turned three double plays. Two of them, I think, were 4-6-3. The one he made, it was a rocket, like a two-hopper that I think he had to go to his left, snagged it, and it was right after Trevino made that play where he got the force out at third on the bunt.
I saw that one, yeah.
That great pretty play, much Martinez was on the verge of imploding, and that got him out of that inning. I think he came out and pitched the sixth, and got him out of the sixth. And then I think they went Ashcraft, Santion, and Pagan to shut it down, just the way you would draw
I
it.
I think
up.
It went nine in a row, didn't they? 3-3-3
I
with the
think they
seventh,
did.
Eighth, and ninth.
Yeah,
I think Pagan only threw seven pitches. Santion may have walked somebody. I can't remember. He may have walked somebody in there, but there was really not a threat once we got to the bullpen.
Graham only threw 15, I think.
Yeah, I think he struck out a couple
three.
Guys.
He struck out all three.
Yeah,
Ashcraft
did.
Okay.
Yeah,
he
was
went full count on
slider.
The first one. It was a little dicey there, but struck him out and got the next two pretty quickly.
So where do we put – and maybe it's going to take care of itself in the short term. I feel like the Candyman's going to go on the DL. But you got Stevenson knocking on the door to come back, who needs a roster spot. I think we kind of got to it. You got to keep the three catchers. Wins has done nothing to – unless it becomes a numbers game. But I don't know how you take Trevino out from as good as the pitchers have been. His offense is a complete bonus. I mean, he's there for his defense. And
I don't know. That's hard, man.
That's hard, but I think it's the same with starting pitching. You've got a lot of decisions that are eventually going to have to be made unless you have people continually get hurt because you've got right now, you have Stevenson and CES on the IL. So, in theory, Stevenson comes back. Who's out? Okay, you put Candelario on IL possibly. I don't know. I don't know his situation exactly. But you still have two guys that eventually are going to come back, and you're going to have to make a decision of who's out.
Yeah, I can tell you right now, if management, upper-level management, the front office does what they usually do, they'll keep Wynn up enough – as long as his batting numbers are that high, and I bet you a dollar to donuts he gets traded at the deadline or just before it.
He wins?
Yep.
That's not all bad because they signed Trevino.
I don't disagree.
Didn't they,
yeah.
They signed him to what? A
extension.
Two years.
Was it 2 years? So this year or next? Or?
Correct. Yep. Originally it was a one-year deal, and then
they extended him
to a second year. Yep.
They've done well in the past catching lightning in a bottle with a player like Wins and trading him at the deadline and getting something decent out of it. That's how we got Castillo, who was the pitcher we traded to Miami, and we got Castillo when he was in Double A. Castillo.
So here's a question for you. Eventually, Lauder's going to be back. What do you do with him? You're not going to put him in the bullpen.
I know
so
my
you
answer.
Only have one of two choices. Anyone?
I'm waiting on Brian. I know.
Yeah, I mean, I would. How far away is he?
He's still probably a month out.
Yeah, I would say that he's still a month out from what they're saying.
I think he's pitching two innings in a complex game, which does not count as service time or as far as him being on the.
I think in a week or so, if he does well in the complex games in a week or 10 days, he. Might be
rehab
one of the minor league teams doing
rehab. Yeah, and I feel like they'd have him go to AAA and depending if there's not really room, they'll probably maximize, you know, the what he can do on a rehab basis, I would think. To buy himself some time, assuming everything's kind of where it is right now. Now, Martinez showed some life last night, but he has not been overly effective. Does he take Martinez's spot and put Martinez into that kind of that long relief role?
If Tito makes the decision based on how he's made the decision with the batting lineup and the hitters, Martinez will go to the pen and Lauder will be a starter. Not that I got anything against Martinez, but last night was the best game he's pitched all year. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, his ERA was 6. He even said it himself. He couldn't make it through the third time in the lineup.
Well, have you seen that they showed the batting average first, second, and third time through the lineup? Did you see that last night?
Uh-uh.
Oh, and the third time through the lineup, it's through the roof.
Yeah. That's not unique around the game, but
may not be unique, but if I remember Tito talking about pitching in spring training, he wanted his starters to go longer than they have historically with the Reds.
And he's been stretching them out. I mean, Lodolo went into got through 7 Sunday.
Yep.
Green's been into the 7th, maybe half of his starts.
But with that being said, the starts you're talking about, they also, it's not like they were giving up 4 and 5 runs. It was like 0 to 2 runs at most. I don't know. He did Tito's done something. Those starting pitchers, I mean, we always knew they had the talent, but they're performing better.
Yeah, I'll say, I mean, I know you guys are both out of town, so I, you know, listen to the pregame and some of the spring training games and some of the games here that were in the regular season. You know, he has that 5 or 10 minute conversation with Tommy Thrall, and during spring training, I mean, I was ready to run through a wall after hearing him talk. I mean, it was night and day compared to David Bell. I mean, he sounds like, even in spring training, he's got a plan. And Bell was just very wishy-washy and just didn't, you know, he's generally positive, but you could tell he's got a plan when he's talking.
Well, and let's be fair to Bell. I mean, it's no different than the business world. You have Tito, who's a future Hall of Famer, as coaches go, and wasn't looking for a job when he took this one. Bell, on the other hand, if I'm not mistaken, that was his first job as a manager of a major league team. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm guessing he'll tell you he learned some things. There are some things he probably would do differently, whether he'd admit it or not. But that's just the difference of being the first-time guy versus a future Hall of Famer that wasn't looking for a job. Tito can tell him to pound salt. This is what I'm doing.
Yep.
What's the front office going to do about it? They're the one that came and begged him to coach this team.
Well,
he's got the cards.
That's the Tito effect. I mean, some of the stuff they were talking about today. I guess as of the end of last night's game, the Reds are number one in defensive efficiency, which I think is defined as balls put in play that result in an out. They're like right at 75%, which is first. Last year, I think they were actually 14th, which is a bit of a surprise, because their defense, I didn't think, was that great last year. So they were middle of the pack, and middle of the pack last year was about 70%.
Well, I think they'll be much better. Do I?
Fundamentals, buddy. Fundamentals.
Well, I think they'll be much better defensively even than they are now if they can find a way to get Ellie to maintain his focus 100% of the time when he's in that field.
Yeah, that's
because if you look at his errors, it looks like he just took the play off.
Yeah, what's the
quote? He's a young kid. You know, it's going to happen.
The quote I've heard is he makes the spectacular look routine and the routine look difficult sometimes.
I'd say that about hits the nail on the head. Like, yeah, he's 22, though, so.
I think having McClain there helps him, too, because I think those two kind of feed off one another. They seem like they're pretty good buds, and they kind of like. Like I played second base in softball. My highlight of playing second base was being the pivot man on a double play ball if we could get it done.
Well, look, McLean also played college ball at a high level at UCLA. Mm-hmm. So he's been around it a bit longer than Ellie. Ellie's 22, superstar talent. He's still a kid compared to McLean. So even though McLean's service time doesn't scream veteran, his mind mentally is much more in a veteran space than Ellie's is. Because when you talk about California or SEC colleges for baseball, I mean, that's the real deal. There's a lot of pro players that come out of those schools.
For sure.
So
since you guys didn't ask, I would tell you that after the first month, I remain cautiously optimistic.
That's why I didn't use that term. I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure you were going to say it.
Like I said, their schedule's been softer. They haven't played, you know, the top tier. I think they've got some tougher games coming up, but, you know, winning is contagious, and they get a taste of winning. I think they can compete with anybody with the pitching staff we have.
Especially if they keep hitting like they are. Well, it's going to come down
to pitching and defense.
Yep.
Let's say it different, pitching and fundamentals. Because as long as they stick with the fundamentals, defensively they'll be better, and offensively they'll be better. You know, if you watch offensively, guys are starting to do the little things that they didn't do in the past. You know, taking the ball to the opposite field when they have to, rather than trying to pull it all the time and hit it out of the park.
Well, last night, like I said, I was at opening day. Last night's the second game I've been to. Ellie hit a double down the left field line, batting left-handed. Lux, I think, hit two down the left field line. He's a left-handed hitter.
Do you think this is a Chris Valleca thing?
They are, like you said, John, you know, they're not swinging for the fences. They're going with
the
pitch
ball in play
when it's warranted.
So do you think this is a Chris Valleca effect? Do you think he's part of the reason for that change in the way they're thinking about hitting, their approach at the plate? Because if you remember, Valleca was never like a power hitter. He was more of like a – if I remember correctly, he was more of like an average hitter. Let's take what the pitcher gives us and put the ball in play. Because Lance McAllister, in fact, he posted something the other day. It was right after the end of their Colorado series. He listed the number of runs scored and how they scored them. They got 6 runs off of home runs, and then the other litany of runs came via singles, doubles, walks, whatever. For Coors Field, pretty good. I was like, okay, that's – they're not just trying to hit the ball out of the park. Now, some of those doubles and singles might have been aided by the high altitude, but nonetheless, they're just putting the ball in play. They're not trying to clear the fences.
I think I saw, and it may have fallen behind, but maybe it was middle of last week or whatever. At some point, they had the top batting average with runners in scoring position in the game. They were hitting right around 300 or, you know, 305 or 295 or something like that. The timely hits and getting the guys in feels improved than over the past couple of years.
You know who's got a really high batting average with runners in scoring position?
Ellie?
Take a guess. Nope. This isn't the guy I'm referring to. Dad?
Is he on the Reds?
Yeah, on the Reds.
Lux?
Nope.
Hayes?
The guy I continually pop up is Spencer Steer. Career-wise, I'm not talking about just this year.
Oh, career-wise.
Oh, I'm focused on this year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I missed that one. Right over my head.
Steer can hit when there's guys on base.
Well, he's got a really good eye.
Yeah, he does.
But going back to your question earlier, Clayton, I do think that the hitting coach has – had a significant effect offensively on this team. You know, you and I have talked about it for over a decade, if not two. Swing for contact. Don't worry about launch angle and all that other craziness. And at the end of the day, you know, when he came along, everything I heard was swing for contact. And now you're seeing it.
I think you're seeing it across the MLB that they trended towards launch angle, home runs, and all this, that, and the other. And I think it's starting to trend back the other direction. I want opportunities.
And so what did the Reds do? They go out and get Moustakas, or they hang on to Suarez too long. And it was just like, let's get some guys on base before we worry about home runs, for love of God.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. Gavin Lux is hitting the cover off the ball. Let's look up this. Let's look up his career stats here. I got a question for you on this. So, Gavin Lux, he is a career 258 hitter, okay? So 2021, he hit 242. 2022, he hit 276. 2024, he hit 251. Those were all playing over 100 games. What do you think is a change for him that now all of a sudden he's hitting the cover off the baseball? Do you think it's the pressure of being in L.A.? Do you think it's getting platooned in L.A. because they had so much superstar talent all over the field that he got platooned and didn't have consistent opportunities? Because that's a big thing for me, is not constantly platooning guys and always playing the lefty versus righty matchup or righty versus lefty matchup. Like, consistency is key in baseball when it comes to hitting. What do y'all think about that?
I think the consistent play, if I'm not mistaken, he was a first-round draft choice for the Dodgers.
Yes, he was.
I don't know if that was that first-round draft choice pressure, and then he's being platooned. He does seem – we talked about Steer having a pretty good eye at the plate. He's got a pretty good eye at the plate. He seems like he gives you a pretty solid at bat every time he's up there, sees a lot of pitches.
Well, the other broadcast guys were talking about it the other day. They're like, man, every time Lux comes to the plate and you're a pitcher, you're thinking, oh, my gosh, not this guy again. I mean, because he's literally one at bat. He can change the outcome of your entire night as a starting pitcher. You going to go five innings or you going to go seven? Because he will run you 8, 9, 10 pitches every at bat.
And I would say, to answer your question, it is the change of scenery, which includes most of the things you mentioned. First of all, you're now playing for a team that has made a statement that you're going to play every day. Might not be the same position every day, but you're going to be in the lineup every day, except when you need rest. Where, that makes a difference.
Turn your camera. I don't
want to
just...
You're fine.
Furthermore, you're in a smaller market, so there's not quite the same pressure in a smaller market that there is in a Los Angeles or New York.
Well, think about it like this. Yeah, he's a first-round draft pick, so he's confident, right? But you're in a clubhouse like the Dodgers, and you got Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Ohtani. I mean, you're talking about a lot of heavy hitters, dude. So whether you want to admit it or not, or whether you know it or not, I'll bet that affects guys more than they realize.
And he's apparently from the Milwaukee area, which I found out when they were playing up the Brewers. So he's from Wisconsin. So he's a Midwestern guy. I don't know if that being thrust into the West Coast and all that. He didn't perform poorly out in L.A. He just, when they're bringing in these high-priced free agents and that, he had a hard time finding, getting maybe he did maybe he didn't get the opportunity that you would normally give a first round draft choice, because they're just so talent heavy and veteran heavy.
He's also was a first round draft choice out of high school, it looks like. I think that plays an effect too, again back to the Matt McClain versus Ellie mindset in the field.
Yeah.
Well, he's been a great addition. I mean, he and Hayes both have been a significant addition to the team this year.
Yeah,
and Trevino.
Hayes has to stay healthy, and was his hamstring or something flaring up? Is that what they said it was, John?
Yeah, on the sprint from first to home last night.
I tell you who else scored from first last night. I think Lux did also, and he looked a little. Like he was bouncing around a little gingerly after, making that first the home run too. So
maybe they don't. They all can't run like Ellie.
No, he might have to stretch
Blake
a little
Dunn.
Bit.
They actually said, based on the distance, Dunn can be faster than Ellie.
I hear Sadak say that all the time. Depending on if it's home to first, they always say they would take Dunn. Home to third, they would take Ellie. Or first to home, they would take Ellie.
Dunn's got that running back speed, dude. He's got that 40 time.
Yeah, well, it didn't get him back to first base quickly enough last night.
Yeah. So, all right, well, so we've talked about the starters. We've talked about the hitters. What about the pen? Where do you think – here's the biggest question. It's not really a question right now, but it is a question. It's like a weird unspoken thing, I guess. Is Pagan the closer? Is he not the closer? Is he going to be taking the ninth inning the rest of the year?
He hasn't been declared the closer, but that's how he's being used. I think as long as he performs in that role, Tito's going to keep him as the closer, I would guess.
Exactly. I think as long as he's performing in that role for this year, he will remain the closer.
Here's the tendency I've noticed about the bullpen. Seventh, eighth, ninth inning. If it's a close game, an important game, it belongs to Ashcraft, Santian, and Pagan, and not in any specific order. Those are their three guys for the latter innings in the game.
That's what it seems like, but I think they might be getting into a pattern where, you know, Ashcraft did the seventh, Santian did the eighth, and Pagan came in for the ninth last night. Because I feel like Santian's been in the eighth. He seems to be the primary eighth inning guy.
They could run into a problem with him, though, because his use is pretty high right now, based on league average and how many innings he's pitched. I'm not saying it will. He's a reliever. It shouldn't kill him. And he's a big dude, so I'd like to think his body can stand up to it, but still. And then everyone else is just kind of a mix in between. So if they bring Lauder back as a starter and Martinez goes to the pen, who gets sent down?
They'll put somebody else on IR.
Man, probably. Well, that's usually their
first
move.
That's the easy solution.
Yeah, that's usually it. Well, now keep in mind, though, you have Jabot and Maul.
Yep.
Both of them are right now on the injured list and looking for an opportunity to get back when they can.
And Maul's one of their three lefties. They got Maul, Rogers, and Suter. Yeah. I think the way that works sometimes is they go up to a guy, hey, you got anything that just doesn't feel necessarily 100%? When they say no, they're like, all right, come over here and stub your toe on this desk. We need to put you on IR.
Well, they do that, but then the guy that's really hurt, they
we need you, buddy.
Play shorthanded for that weekend, and then they'll put him on the IR retroactive to, you know, Thursday when we could have had somebody else up here for the weekend series.
Yeah.
Yep, they will do that.
I think that's one thing we may never know.
And maybe we shouldn't.
Probably not. So, yeah, they did. I'm surprised they got, Rogers, Barlow, Jabot. I mean, Jabot was there, but Rogers and Barlow were two last-minute pickups for the pen that actually broke camp with the team. But their bullpen, I think, is a lot more solid now. If you only got to worry about innings 7, 8, 9, and the starters are pitching into the 6th, like Tito says, it's the other mix of characters that who knows what's going to happen.
Yep.
And that's the other thing. If the starting pitching is going like that and Lauder does come back, if Martinez is a long reliever, does he take one of those innings from Santian or Ashcraft, the 7th or the 8th, or is he strictly, hey, our starter got his tail kicked today, your mid-relief for three or four innings?
I can't remember. I feel like he's been more of that 2 to 3 inning reliever than when he comes in. Has he ever? I don't think he's ever been a one inning guy, has he? In his career,
I think it's more 2 to 3.
Yeah. Which, and you're gonna have injuries and things. You know, you'll have the, what was it? Was that the game in Baltimore when they scored the 24 runs that I think Suter started because Lodolo went on the, they have the baby, and was it Carson Spires had to come in and pitch like 6 innings on Saturday because they were getting shelled, and he was supposed to pitch Sunday, and then, you know, they wound up going out and scoring 24 runs for Suter. So.
My goodness. All right, so 1, 2. I'm going to ask you guys a question. I'm looking at stats here. Well, let's make this interesting, boys. Kind of like little trivia. 1, 2, 3, 4.
I hate trivia night at the pub.
5, 6.
I refuse
7,
to go.
8. All right. This includes having Trevino and Wins as catcher and DH. How many players, if the Reds were to do it, how many players in the nine-man lineup could the Reds put out there tomorrow and have all guys in that lineup hitting 270 or better? As the stats stand for this season today.
How many out of eight?
No, out of nine.
Out of nine.
You'll assume you guys both know how well both catchers are hitting, so you're going to assume one of those is DH and one's a catcher.
I want to say at least six, because there's – well, if you have Wins and Trevino, and Trevino might not be hitting 300, but you've got – although I think he is.
I said 270 or better.
Yeah.
Because if you want to look at our batting averages the last few years, it's been below 270 for most hitters in the lineup.
It's about six.
Six
five
to seven.
Or six.
Eight.
Well, because Mitch was at a game with me last night, and the comment I made, because what I think Hayes was fourth, Marte fifth, and Luck sixth. Or I might have that.
I forgot Marte.
Jacked up. Yeah, maybe I had – so you had three. I asked him, when's the last time that you saw three consecutive batters for the Reds that were hitting 300 or higher?
Yeah, that's my point. So you got De La Cruz, Hayes, Marte, Wins, Trevino, Friedel, Lux, Espinal. Like, Espinal's hitting 288, and he's mostly on the bench right now. That's nuts.
Yeah.
You know, one thing about Espinal, you can bet he's going to get that bat on the ball.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was looking at that today. He's got three strikeouts in 59 at-bats, so call it about 65 plate appearances. Trevino's only got seven strikeouts for as many at-bats as he's had. Marte hasn't had enough at-bats, but yeah, everybody else is. Yeah, Wins has even struck out 10 times in 30 at-bats. But Espinal and Trevino, they do get the bat on the ball.
Marte struck out 6 times in 46 at-bats. Hayes has struck out 13 times in 52 at-bats.
And then, do you think Will Benson will be back up with the team this year?
No.
I don't know where you'd go with it.
Unless someone gets hurt.
I would say someone's.
I think plural. A couple guys. He got to come up when they ran into a little injury problem. He went 0-for-4 with 4 Ks. So if you look at the stats, he's got 4 at-bats and 4 Ks on the year.
Yeah, I think there'd have to be a couple guys get hurt before he comes up.
Yep.
Here you go. So you talked about Espinal. TJ Friedel, 18 strikeouts and 112 at-bats. And that's what you want in a leadoff hitter.
Yep.
Well, not only that, but he can do the little things. He's a very effective bunter. He can hit to all fields.
I'd argue Espinal could get traded if this lineup stays healthy and keeps doing well, and Espinal keeps doing well, because he could legitimately be a leadoff hitter if somebody needs it because of his contact rate.
I like him. I'd hate to see him.
I think
him
he's
go.
Already.
So would I.
Has he already played 5 positions this season? I thought I saw.
Probably.
Or he's been working out at first. Is he long any time at first?
I'm not sure. I did talk about that, though. Here's an interesting thought for you. So the guys we put at first base, you got what? Let's put CES to the side, because I don't know how tall he is. You got Steer. You got Candelario. Who else do they put it? Those are pretty much the two they put at first.
Stevenson's played a little bit of first, hasn't he, when he's did play some first last year?
Yeah, but for this year, you got Candelario and Steer a lot of times at first base. Those guys are not tall for first basemen.
No.
So nope. Think about how that leads, how that affects your defense. I mean, Steer's 5'9". Your typical first baseman, the average height's like 6'2 or 6'4".
Yeah, that guy playing for – did you watch any of the games this weekend? That guy playing first for the Rockies was a giant.
Yes.
Especially if I think he walked once standing next to Steer, he made Steer look like a midget.
Yeah. Well, now the advantage of having a guy like Steer at first base, he did it last night in the game. They hit a ball back to him, and instead of having to flip it to, I think it was Martinez or whoever was pitching.
Oh, he took it himself.
He was able to round it and take it himself because he is a bit more athletic than your quintessential build on a first baseman.
Yeah, there are trade-offs there. But I think those are the best options they have at this juncture.
Well, we talked about CES. I mean, you know, he may, when he's healthy, they may park him in AAA for a little bit. I don't know where you pencil him in at this point.
Again, it's a good problem to have.
And he's young. You want him to get at bats.
I'd be interested to see how long this lasts, to be honest with you, the hitting.
Yeah. I mean, there's some guys that, yeah, Lux, you know, to quote John, he likes looking at the back of the baseball card. So, you know.
I enjoy the back of the card. And I would say that, you know, some of those guys will cool off. But hopefully at that point, guys like McClain will start getting hot.
That's how it's supposed to work.
I think Lux is a unique case and Hayes is a unique case. I think Lux could start to cool off, but I think the back of the card would say 250. I think he's got a legitimate shot at being a 270, 280 hitter, like seeing what he's done with the change of scenery. And then Hayes, you got to remember, he was an all-star 2 years ago. Last year, his numbers weren't great because he went down with that kidney infection.
Yeah, that was a lost season.
So he was showing promise before that, obviously. So those guys, I wouldn't necessarily stick to the premise of the back of the card doesn't lie.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, they can, the back of the card, you got ups and downs, and if they stay on the upside and both hit closer to 300, that would be
We got a ball club, I'll say that. We got a ball club.
But Elliott, you know, 270, I mean, if he can maintain that, and he – still striking out a little too much, but...
Like 30% of the time.
You don't notice it. I don't notice it as much as last year.
I agree.
But here's the deal. If you want Ellie to continue to do well, you need Hayes right behind him.
Hayes or Lux or somebody back there.
Because they can't afford to pitch around him.
Correct.
Because when they try to pitch around him, he'll swing at stuff that he shouldn't be swinging at, therefore leading to the strikeouts. So
all good stuff.
All right, what's your prediction for May? Okay, let's do this. Prediction for May, over or under 500 record for the month of May.
I'm going to say over because I'll be optimistic. I'm not sure what the schedule looks like.
You want me to tell you?
Sure.
I'll tell you. We'll give full transparency here. All right, we've got the Cardinals, the Nationals, the Braves for four games, the Astros, the White Sox, the Guardians, the Pirates, the Cubs twice, and the Royals. Cubs as in two series.
And I think the Royals are decent. Braves are decent.
Not this year for the Braves. They aren't.
Well, they got off to a bad start. I haven't paid attention. I know they were like 0-8. I don't know if they've gotten it together or not.
I'm going to over 500.
I think over 500. The Cubs will be tough. I think the Royals are decent. Guardians are okay.
I'm going to go.
Hey, here's the bottom line. We're not playing the Brewers.
I was just about to say, I'm going to say over 500, but if it was the Brewers twice in the month of May, I'd go with under because for some reason the Brewers have our number.
That's the truth.
They own space in our head.
Yeah. I don't even know you can say that at this point. It's just some weird phenomenon. Because I don't know that these guys even necessarily look at it like that.
Well, it continues to hold true.
Yep, they've got our number.
Man, the Pirates. What an organization to play for, the Pittsburgh Pirates. You got Paul Skeens, and you're still abysmal most nights.
Yeah.
It could be worse. You could be playing for the Cleveland Browns in football.
In other words, playing with Shador Sanders in football.
And they just signed that, was it Deontay Johnson, that receiver that was with like four teams last year?
The headache?
Yeah.
The headache, yeah. They signed him.
Goodness gracious.
They're going to need detention for him. I think that everyone said it's a conspiracy against Shador. It's like, no. Everyone saw all the antics off the field and they said, nah, this is the NFL. We want nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, if I'm going to invest that much in a team, I make the rules, you don't.
Yep. Well, all right, while we're here, what'd you think about the Bengals draft?
Feeling a little bit better about it as I hear some more talk. There's some more positives. They're hitting some guests on some of the local sports talks that but I think they've got some guys that can start. I mean, my biggest frustration is when you're drafting number 17 or somewhere in there, that guy needs to start on day one. I'm tired of them drafting a project in that spot.
And that's what they did.
Yep. Now, maybe I think they're putting a lot of faith in Al Golden, because for some reason Lou didn't seem to want to play the young guys, didn't trust them.
Well, I am glad you are optimistic, because I am not as optimistic as you project.
Yeah, well, look at the bright side. We got T and Chase and Burrow. We just got to get Zach Taylor to figure out how to pick a game plan and stick with it, because he's got a knack for finding a way to get to the end of the game if they're down big and coming back or whatever, and then they get to overtime and he goes away from what got him there.
Yeah.
Got him into overtime. It's like, dude, just stick with your guns.
You know what? I agree with everything you said, but I think it's easier than that. I think with Zach Taylor, he is the embodiment of the definition of insanity. You do the same thing over and over, the same way, every preseason, and you expect a different outcome in the first four games. And yet, what do they do? The only thing he needs to do is maybe play his players a little more in the preseason, get them some reps, and they might be ready for those first couple games. They might have their timing down. They might know who to block and when. But unfortunately, that's not what he does. And at the end of the day, if I were ownership, I'd say you do the same thing this preseason and you lose the first two games, don't come back for the third.
Yeah, but we're Cincinnati sports fans, buddy. We don't have that luxury of having owners that look at things like that.
We don't like to eat contracts.
Yeah.
Wow. I would his in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
The funny thing is we don't pay him that well. Tito's the first one probably that got paid market value or close to it.
Yeah, but Tito can't even keep his water on.
Well, there is that.
At least we know he's concentrated on baseball and not things outside of his job.
For the love of God.
All right, Brian. Well, thank you for your time tonight, man. That was fun.
All right.
We were going to do a little talk while they were playing, but obviously that ain't happening given the postponement of the game.
Yeah,
so
we
don't have to try that soon.
I guess they called it. Yeah, we just had a storm come through. I guess there must be some more weather on the way.
Well, maybe.
So did they call the game, or is it still postponed?
I think it's canceled, I think, for tonight.
It's canceled. It's postponed. Yeah, we'll have to try that here in the next couple weeks. That'll be fun.
So I wonder it's the Cardinals. Wonder what they'll do, because they have a businessman special Thursday. I wonder if they'll play a doubleheader Thursday or just make it up later in the season.
I'd say later in the season, because they got to get them out of town. It depends where the Cardinals have to go.
Yeah, yep. But they'll be back in town two more times.
Yep. All right, boys. Well, you enjoy your evening.
You too.
Good luck in the Derby.
Yep. Good luck to all of us.
That's right. All right, see you guys.
See ya.
Cheers.